We talked yesterday about vulnerability.
昨天我们也谈到了这种可以受到伤害的特性。
When we share what is deep inside of us, it's always vulnerable.
当我们分享我们内心当中最内心当中的东西的时候，我们成为一个可以被受到伤害的。
When we share our thoughts and our feelings.Our dreams, our fears.
当我们分享我们的思想、我们的感觉、我们的梦想、我们的什么其他的吧，我们都会有一种都会有一种那个叫被别人伤害的这种可能。
Then it's this is where a lot of healing takes place.
所以在这个过程当中会有好多的。好多的 healing, 好多的治愈也发生。
And this is how we can also grow spiritually.
这从这个分享过程当中，我们的灵性也会得到成长。
But there's always a risk to share these things.
但是在分享这些东西的时候，是有一些危险的。
If someone does not listen to us, is not gentle with us,
当别人不愿意聆听我们，甚至说。对我们不是那么温和很粗暴的时候
then we feel rejected and betrayed
我们会感觉到我们被排斥了我们被背叛了被出卖了不是背叛被出卖了
so learning about vulnerability is very important for many reasons
所以在学习这个可被伤害性的时候我们发现有好多的原因
There is a woman who teaches about vulnerability in a very beautiful way.
有一个妇女，她在讲论这个可被伤害性的时候，用她自己的很美妙的解释。
And she gave this lecture as part of a TED Talks. Do you know TED Talks?
TED Talks.
Yeah.
10 days or 10 talks?
No, TED, T-E-D.
T-E-D.TED Talks, okay. 他给一个，他给一个讲座，他叫做 TED Talks。这个 TED 可能它是一个特别的词，可能是简写。
And this particular talk is one of the most popular.
这是一个很特殊的谈话，这是一个现在是很流行的一个谈话。
There are.Many millions of people who have watched this talk.
好多人，那就是成千累万的人，他们去看这个，看这个对话的。Is this a TV program?
No, it's they have conferences in different parts of the world.
Okay.
And they take experts in different fields to give a 20-minute talk.
Okay.
And summarize the most important insights.
所以这不是我刚才问我说是不是一个电视节目？不是，它是一个组织，然后它组在世界各地啊，邀请专家来，组成会议，然后这些专家呢，每个人有20分钟的讲话，这些都是一个专题，对专题的一个讨论。
So this is a woman who is a researcher about vulnerability.
这个妇女呢是关于这个人的可受伤害性的一个研究。
So, and she's also, I think, she's very honest herself, and so also inspiring and I think a little entertaining.
她是对自己很认真的，很诚实的，同时她也。是很具有灵性的。
So, and hopefully the subtitles, the Chinese will work well enough.
希望这个副标题啊，我们为我们来说是很吸引人，就是新每 weekday 每天呢有一个新的思想。
So I'll start with this. A couple of years ago, an event planner called me because I was going to do a speaking event. And she called and she said, I'm really struggling how to write about you in a little flyer. And I thought, well, what's the struggle? And she said, Well, I saw you speak, and I'm going to call you a researcher, I think, but I'm afraid if I call you a researcher, no one will come because they'll think you're boring and irrelevant. And I was like, okay, and she said, so, but the thing I liked about your talk is, you know, you're a storyteller, so I think what I'll do is just call you a storyteller. And of course, the academic, insecure part of me was like, you're going to call me a what? And she said, I'm going to call you a storyteller. And I was like, oh, why not Magic Pixie? Let me think about this for a second. And so I tried to call deep on my courage, and I thought, you know, I am a storyteller. I'm a qualitative researcher. I collect stories. That's what I do. And maybe stories are just data with a soul, you know, and maybe I'm just a storyteller. So I said, you know what? Why don't you just say I'm a researcher storyteller? And she went, there's no such thing. So I'm a researcher storyteller. And I'm going to talk to you today. We're talking about expanding perception. And so I want to talk to you and tell some stories about a piece of my research that fundamentally expanded my perception and really actually changed the way that I live and love and work and parent. And this is where my story starts. When I was a young researcher, doctoral student, my first year I had a research professor who said to us, here's the thing, if you cannot measure it, it does not exist. And I thought he was just sweet talking to me. I was like, really? And he's like, absolutely. So you have to understand that I have a bachelor's in social work, a master's in social work, and I was getting my PhD in social work. So my entire academic career was surrounded by people who kind of believed in the life's messy, love it, you know, and I'm more of the life's messy, clean it up, organize it, and put it into a bento box. And so to think that I had found my way, to found a career that takes me, you know, really one of the big sayings in social work is lean into the discomfort of the work. And I'm like, you know, knock discomfort upside the head and move it over and get all A's. That was my mantra. So I was very excited about this. And so I thought, you know what, this is the career for me because I am interested in some messy topics, but I want to be able to make them not messy. I want to understand them. I want to hack into these things that I know are important and lay the code out for everyone to see. So where I started was with connection, because by the time you're a social worker for 10 years, what you realize is that connection is why we're here. It's what gives purpose and meaning to our lives. This is what it's all about. It doesn't matter whether you talk to people who work in social justice and mental health and abuse and neglect. What we know is that connection, the ability to feel connected, is neurobiologically, that's how we're wired, it's why we're here. So I thought, you know what, I'm gonna start with connection. Well, you know that situation where you get an evaluation from your boss and she tells you 37 things that you do really awesome and one thing that you can't, you know, an opportunity for growth? And all you can think about is that opportunity for growth, right? Well, apparently this is the way my work went as well, because when you ask people about love, they tell you about heartbreak. When you ask people about belonging, they'll tell you the most excruciating experiences of being excluded. And when you ask people about connection, the stories they told me were about disconnection. So very quickly, really about 6 weeks into this research, I ran into this unnamed thing that absolutely unraveled connection in a way that I didn't understand or had never seen. And so I pulled back out of the research and thought, I need to figure out what this is. And it turned out to be shame. And shame is really easily understood as the fear of disconnection. Is there something about me that if other people know it or see it, that I won't be worthy of connection? The things I can tell you about it, it's universal. We all have it. The only people who don't experience shame have no capacity for human empathy or connection. No one wants to talk about it, and the less you talk about it, the more you have it. What underpinned this shame, this I'm not good enough, which we all know that feeling, I'm not blank enough, I'm not thin enough, rich enough, beautiful enough, smart enough, promoted enough. The thing that underpinned this was excruciating vulnerability. This idea of in order for connection to happen, we have to allow ourselves to be seen, really seen. And you know how I feel about vulnerability. I hate vulnerability. And so I thought, this is my chance to beat it back with my measuring stick. I'm going in. I'm going to figure this stuff out. I'm going to spend a year. I'm going to totally deconstruct shame. I'm going to understand how vulnerability works. And I'm going to outsmart it. So I was ready. And I was really excited. As you know, it's not going to turn out well. You know this. So I could tell you a lot about shame, but I'd have to borrow everyone else's time. But here's what I can tell you that it boils down to. And this may be one of the most important things that I've ever learned in the decade of doing this research. My 1 year's turned into 6 years. Thousands of stories, hundreds of long interviews, focus groups. At one point, people were sending me journal pages and sending me their stories. Thousands of pieces of data. And 6 years, and I kind of got a handle on it. I kind of understood this is what shame is, this is how it works. I wrote a book, I published a theory, but something was not okay. And what it was is that if I roughly took the people I interviewed and divided them into people who really have a sense of worthiness, that's what this comes down to, a sense of worthiness. They have a strong sense of love and belonging. And folks who struggle for it, and folks who are always wondering if they're good enough. There was only one variable that separated the people who have a strong sense of love and belonging and the people who really struggle for it, and that was the people who have a strong sense of love and belonging believe they're worthy of love and belonging. That's it. They believe they're worthy. And to me, the hard part of the one thing that keeps us out of connection is our fear that we're not worthy of connection was something that personally and professionally I felt like I needed to understand better. So what I did is I took all of the interviews where I saw worthiness, where I saw people living that way, and just looked at those. What do these people have in common? And I have a slight office supply addiction, but another talk. So I had a manila notebook, a manila folder, and I had a Sharpie, and I was like, what am I going to call this research? And the first words that came to my mind were wholehearted. These are kind of wholehearted people living from this deep sense of worthiness. So I wrote at the top of the manila folder, and I started looking at the data. In fact, I did it first in this very four-day, very intensive data analysis where I went back, pulled these interviews, pulled the stories, pulled the incidents. What's the theme? What's the pattern? My husband left town with the kids because I always go into this kind of Jackson Pollock crazy thing where I'm just like writing and going and kind of just in my researcher mode. And so here's what I found. What they had in common was a sense of courage. And I want to separate courage and bravery for you for a minute. Courage, the original definition of courage, when it first came into the English language, it's from the Latin word cur, meaning heart, and the original definition was to tell the story of who you are with your whole heart. And so these folks had, very simply, the courage to be imperfect. They had the compassion to be kind to themselves first and then to others, because as it turns out, we can't practice compassion with other people if we can't treat ourselves kindly. And the last was they had connection, and this was the hard part, as a result of authenticity. They were willing to let go of who they thought they should be in order to be who they were, which is, you have to absolutely do that for connection. The other thing that they had in common was this. They fully embraced vulnerability. They believed that what made them vulnerable made them beautiful. They didn't talk about vulnerability being comfortable, nor did they really talk about it being excruciating, as I had heard it earlier in the shame interviewing. They just talked about it being necessary. They talked about the willingness to say I love you first. The willingness to do something where there are no guarantees. The willingness to breathe through waiting for the doctor to call after your mammogram. The willing to invest in a relationship that may or may not work out. They thought this was fundamental. I personally thought it was betrayal. I could not believe I had pledged allegiance to research, where our job, you know, the definition of research is to control and predict, to study phenomenon for the explicit reason to control and predict. And now my very, you know, my mission to control and predict had turned up the answer that the way to live is with vulnerability and to stop controlling and predicting. This led to a little breakdown, which actually looked more like this. And it did. It led to I call it a breakdown, my therapist calls it a spiritual awakening. Spiritual awakening sounds better than breakdown, but I assure you it was a breakdown. And I had to put my data away and go find a therapist. Let me tell you something. You know who you are when you call your friends and say, I think I need to see somebody. Who, do you have any recommendations? Because about five of my friends are like, woo, I wouldn't want to be your therapist. And I was like, what does that mean? And they're like, I'm just saying, you know, like, don't bring your measuring stick. Okay. So I found a therapist. My first meeting with her, Diana, I brought in my list of the way the wholehearted live. And I sat down, and she said, you know, how are you? And I said, I'm great, you know, I'm okay. And she said, what's going on? And I said, and this is a therapist who sees therapists, because we have to go to those, because their BS meters are good. And so I said, here's the thing, I'm struggling. And she said, what's the struggle? And I said, well, I have a vulnerability issue, and, you know, and I know that vulnerability is kind of the core of shame and fear and our struggle for worthiness, but it appears that it's also the birthplace of joy, of creativity, of belonging, of love. And I think I have a problem. And I need some help. And I said, but here's the thing, no family stuff, no childhood shit. I just need some strategies. So she goes like this. And then I said, it's bad, right? She said, it's neither good nor bad. It just is what it is. And I said, oh my God, this is gonna suck. And it did, and it didn't. And it took about a year. And you know how there are people that, like, when they realize that vulnerability and tenderness are important, that they kind of surrender and walk into it? A, that's not me. And B, I don't even hang out with people like that. For me, it was a year-long street fight. It was a slugfest. Vulnerability pushed, I pushed back. I lost the fight, but probably won my life back. And so then I went back into the research and spent the next couple of years really trying to understand what they, the wholehearted, what the choices they were making, and what are we doing with vulnerability? Why do we struggle with it so much? Am I alone in struggling with vulnerability? No. So this is what I learned. We numb vulnerability. When we're waiting for the call, it was funny, I sent something out on Twitter and on Facebook that says, how would you define vulnerability? What makes you feel vulnerable? And within an hour and a half, I had 150 responses. Because I wanted to know, you know, what's out there? Having to ask my husband for help because I'm sick and we're newly married. Initiating sex with my husband. Initiating sex with my wife. Being turned down. Asking someone out. Waiting for the doctor to call back. Getting laid off, laying off people. This is the world we live in. We live in a vulnerable world. And one of the ways we deal with it is we numb vulnerability. And I think there's evidence. And it's not the only reason this evidence exists, but I think that there it's a huge cause. We are the most in debt, obese, addicted, and medicated adult cohort in U.S. history. The problem is, and I learned this from the research, that you cannot selectively numb emotion. You can't say, here's the bad stuff. Here's vulnerability, here's grief, here's shame, here's fear, here's disappointment. I don't want to feel these. I'm going to have a couple of beers and a banana nut muffin. I don't want to feel these. And I know that's knowing laughter. I hack into your lives for a living. I know that's, God. You can't numb those hard feelings without numbing the other affects or emotions. You cannot selectively numb. So when we numb those, we numb joy. We numb gratitude. We numb happiness. And then we are miserable and we are looking for purpose and meaning. And then we feel vulnerable. So then we have a couple of beers and a banana nut muffin. And it becomes this dangerous cycle. One of the things that I think that we need to think about is why and how we numb. And it doesn't just have to be addiction. The other thing we do is we make everything that's uncertain, certain. Religion has gone from a belief in faith and mystery to certainty. I'm right, you're wrong, shut up. That's it. Just certain. The more afraid we are, the more vulnerable we are, the more afraid we are. This is what politics looks like today. There's no discourse anymore. There's no conversation. There's just blame. You know how blame is described in the research? A way to discharge pain and discomfort. We perfect, if there's anyone who wants their life to look like this, it would be me. But it doesn't work, because what we do is we take fat from our butts and put it in our cheeks. Which just, I hope in 100 years people will look back and go, wow. And we perfect, most dangerously, our children. Let me tell you what we think about children. They're hardwired for struggle when they get here. When you hold those perfect little babies in your hand, our job is not to say, look at her, she's perfect. My job is just to keep her perfect, make sure she makes the tennis team by 5th grade and Yale by 7th grade. That's not our job. Our job is to look and say, you know what? You're imperfect and you're wired for struggle, but you are worthy of love and belonging. That's our job. Show me a generation of kids raised like that and we'll end the problems I think we see today. We pretend that what we do doesn't have an effect on people. We do that in our personal lives. We do that corporate, whether it's a bailout, an oil spill, a recall. We pretend like what we're doing doesn't have a huge impact on other people. I would say to companies, this is not our first rodeo, people. We just need you to be authentic and real and say, we're sorry, we'll fix it. But there's another way, and I'll leave you with this. This is what I have found, to let ourselves be seen, deeply seen, vulnerably seen. To love with our whole hearts, even though there's no guarantee. And that's really hard. I can tell you as a parent, that's excruciatingly difficult. To practice gratitude and joy in those moments of kind of terror when we're wondering, can I love you this much? Can I believe in this passionately? Can I be this fierce about this? Just to be able to stop and instead of catastrophizing what might happen to say, I'm just so grateful. Because to feel this vulnerable means I'm alive. And the last, which I think is probably the most important, is to believe that we're enough. Because when we work from a place, I believe, that says, I'm enough, then we stop screaming and start listening. We're kinder and gentler to the people around us, and we're kinder and gentler to ourselves. That's all I have.
Cannabis is like breeds of dogs.
I like to say it's a pit bull and a poodle.
You've got your tiny chihuahuas and you've got your large Great Danes.
They're both dogs, but they're two completely different genetics.
whatever that is. Okay. So maybe let's take just one or two minutes and write down a couple of things that, that you noticed or that, that made an impression on you.
This or the program?
From
one?
The, yeah.
From this picture?
No. From the,
okay,
what we just watched.
Okay, from the TED Talk.
Yeah.
从那个女的讲话的内容当中, the TED Talk.
Okay, is anybody willing to share something that...
我们当中谁想说点什么, 关于他? 说一些... ...准备好了吗?
Something that was new or interesting to you, or something that you did not understand?
对，是不是有一些东西比较新、比较新颖、比较对你们感兴趣，或者是有些事儿你们是不是不理解？
Or was it too fast and you didn't follow it?
或者讲太快，我们跟不上。 所以最低我们知道它这个，就这个片子这个 title 是什么呢？我们写了呢。 Listening to shame. Listening to shame.
The power of vulnerability is the one we just watched. As you can see, almost 41 million views. She started by saying that life is about connection.
她在讲的是 我们生命呢，生活是关于关系的。
Do you agree with that?
Yes.
你是不是同意啊？ 生活是关于关系的。
Mm-hmm. We have a more full life when we are more connected.
当我们关系越多的时候， 我们越富有生命力。
Of course, you can understand all of her insights from a human perspective.
当然我们可以从人性的这个角度来了解她的讲话。
But we also understand all of these things from a faith perspective.
我们也可以从信仰的角度来理解她的说的。
And our ultimate source of connection is Jesus Christ.
这个最后的这个关系是从耶稣基督的关系。
But what did she say separates those who feel connected from those who do not feel connected?
她说了什么呢？是关于那些自己自认为是跟别人有关系的和跟认为自认为是跟别人没有关系的，她说的什么？
Do you remember?
你们还记得吗? Russia to be loud, like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's very, very simple. She said that in her research, she found there are two categories of people. There are those who feel worthy of connection and those who do not feel worthy of connection.
So he divided into two parts. One is he thought, I am worthy of building a relationship with others. I am worthy of having value. Some people think I am not worthy. I am not worthy of building a relationship with others.
Or what she said is actually there are those who feel worthy and those who are always wondering if they are enough.
有的人就感觉到我是值得的, 有的人是彷徨, 说我是不是, 有, 足够的这个价值, 有, 不光是有价值, 能够这个去建立关系。
One of the great things that we do as priests and also in a particular way as a spiritual father is to help people feel worthy of connection.
作为神父,特别作为灵修导师的话,我们做的最重要的一个事儿就是让别人感觉到他是有价值,有力量去建立这种关系的。
Of course, we know that as a statement of faith that Jesus accepts every one of us.
当然我们知道在信仰的陈述当中,耶稣接受
But it's one thing to know it, and it's another thing to feel it, to believe it.
And
when we help someone to feel worthy of connection to us, that can also help them feel worthy of connection to God.
当我们感觉到这个人值得我们跟他们建立关系的时候，也是这个人意识到他有。
Some people will feel so blessed that you took 10 or 15 minutes to listen to them.
当你用十分钟、二十分钟很认真地聆听他的时候，他们是感觉到如此的被祝福了，如此的荣幸，我们不叫祝福，叫英文的blessed，如此的荣幸。
And they think if Father listens to my problem and he cares about me, then I must be worthy of connection. So she gave then she divided people into two categories, into those who are wholehearted and those who are not.
她把人分成了两部分，一个是全心全意的，一个是不是全心全意的。
And she gave three qualities of the wholehearted.
对于这个全心全意的人呢，她用了三个特质来描述。
The first quality is having courage.
第一个是有勇气。
And courage means to tell your story with your whole heart.
有勇气的就是说，你可以全心的去把自己的故事讲出来。
And the second is compassion.
第二一个是compassion，compassion是同情。
And compassion meaning to be kind to ourselves and then to others.
同情意味着对自己 kind, 对自己好, 同情别人也好。
And then the last is connection.
And then 第三一个就是关系。
But connection that comes through authenticity.
Authenticity.
Being authentic, being
Authenticity. 这个关系呢建立在真诚上。
We are authentic when we let go of who we think we should be and we are willing to be who we are.
真诚建立在不是建立在我们应该是什么，而是建立在我们确实是什么样子的。
It takes courage to do that, to be authentic.
所以成为一个真诚的人也需要很大的勇气的。
And that's where we talk about embracing vulnerability.
所以, 我们就来谈论要拥抱脆弱性或拥抱可被伤害性。
If I show you who I really am, then you might reject me.
如果我把我告诉你我真真实实的我是谁，你可能会排斥我。
And so we always show the best version of ourselves.
所以我们通常是把我们最好的版本展现给别人。
But if I only show the best version, then I always have a question, am I worthy?
如果我总是把我最好的那个版本显示给人，那么我面对一个问题就是，我是不是值得？
Would you still accept me if you really knew me?
如果你真的认识到我，了解我，你是不是真在？你是不是要接受我，还要接受我？
And when we feel that divide between how I know myself and what I show everybody else, that creates a lot of tension.
当我们看到这个区别，这个真实的自我和我愿意把那个最好的版本显示给别人的这两个方面的区别的时候，我们会需要很大的勇气去面对。
And that's where she talked about numbing vulnerability.
Numbing.
Numb, yeah.
Numbing.
Numb.
Numb, okay, numb. Numb, numb. 所以他又谈到了这个叫麻木 ,numb 叫麻木是对于这个脆弱的麻木感觉麻痹麻木都可以。
How do you numb vulnerability?
你如何的把你的这个可被伤害性麻木掉呢或麻痹掉呢麻痹、啊、
麻痹
你这是麻痹精啊
麻痹
She gave some examples and maybe you also have some ideas
他给了一些样本给了一些故事 同时我们也应该有自己的一些思想理解你们 do you want them to talk about?
Yes.
你们看你们有没有什么思想如何的把自己的这种可被伤害性或者这个把自己的那个脆弱性麻痹掉就是已经感觉到没有这种脆弱性
麻醉
他还喝酒啊make him drunk
啊、
那里边不，那影片里边不就说那个
啊，
很多美国那用药物呀，
酒呀。In this program, they also talk about the they take drugs.
Uh huh.
They take drugs. Yeah.
Yeah. She said a beer and a banana nut muffin.
啊，啤酒啊，吗啡呀，
吸毒，
都是。Intend to avoid the connection with others.
To avoid?
对，这里边反映的什么连接起来，就说人性的脆弱Does it talk about when we talk about the connection between the this vulnerability and the awakeness of our humanity? The two, the connection between the vulnerability and the awakeness of the humanity.His question is whether it's talk about this.
Yeah, the it's our so another way that we numb vulnerability is by trying to perfect our humanity to make it seem like we have no problems.
所以另一个呢，就是 面对我们这个可被伤害性的时候，就是我们假装我们是 perfect， 我们假装我们是十全十美的。
But the reality is we do have many weaknesses in our humanity.
可是问题是我们确实有，在我们人性当中有很多的弱点。
And then we also commit sins.
同时我们也犯罪了。
So, when we try to cover all of that up, then, we're numbing vulnerability.
当我们把这些东西隐藏起来，盖起来的时候，我们会让我们的这个可伤害性麻木。
She described the way that we feel when we hold a when a parent holds a little baby.
她讲的故事是，这个一个人举起一个小孩的时候。
And the parent is tempted to think you are perfect, and my job is to keep you perfect.
那父母可能就想，哎呀，你是十全十美的，我的工作就是，我的任务就是让你十全十美，保持下去。
But the parent's job is to say, no, you are imperfect, you are weak, and life is difficult, but you are worthy of connection.
可是父母应该说，你并不是十全十美的，生活是很艰苦的，可是呢，你是值得我们跟你建立关系的。
So again, this is the kind of thing that we do as spiritual parents as well. Is
这也是我们如何的对待我们灵性子女的时候该做的、该说的。
And sometimes when we listen to people, we can hear them trying to convince us that they are good or worthy.
所以当我有些时候呢，我们聆听别人的时候。别人会说服，企图说服我们，他们是十全十美的，他们是值得我们什么信赖的，值得我们建立关系的。
I have listened to a lot of people, and it's easy for me to recognize when they're trying to convince me that they're worthy.
我也跟很多人打交道，好多人我也能够很容易的意识到，他们就是在说服我说。我是值得你信赖的，值得你建立关系的。
Sometimes people tell me all of their spiritual accomplishments.
好多人就愿意跟我讲他们的灵性方面得到的达到的成就。
But I always want to lead them to greater honesty.
我是慢慢的把他们领到一个更大的一个诚实里面去。
I love their accomplishments, but I want them to know that I love them more fully than that.
我爱他们的成就，同时我更爱的是他们整个的人。
And so sometimes I say, it sounds like you're trying really hard and you've done many good things.
那我经常我们讲，事实上，尽管你有好多的成就，可是生活还是很艰苦的，甚至还是很困难的。
But you probably also struggle and have some make some failures.
你或许也仍然在挣扎的，你这个做了一些失败的事儿。
Tell me about the areas that you are growing.
告诉我你那些仍然需要成长的东西。
Brené Brown also said that we numb vulnerability through blaming.
这个讲者他同时也告诉我们，我们试图用指责别人来麻痹我们的那种脆弱。
When I feel unworthy, I want to point the finger and say it's someone else's fault.
当我感觉到我是不值得的，没有那个价值的时候，我会把手指到别人，是别人的错误。
We can blame the our families, or we can blame the seminary, or we can blame the rector, or somebody else. But it's good when we see ourselves doing that to ask the question, why am I hurting? Where's the vulnerability I'm running from?
为什么我被现在被伤害呢? Hurting, 就是我们被这个正在被伤害呢? 为什么会发生这事儿?
And then the last way, she said, another way is by making things that are uncertain, certain.
另一个, 它是我们的受伤害性得到麻痹的一个方法是
I'm right, you're wrong, shut up.
我对你错,
and we can do that with religion, we can do that with our in our relationships.
我们可以, 对于我们的信仰这么做, 也可以对我们的人际关系这样做的。
In the question of why do the innocent suffer, we can also have this feeling of vulnerability.
那问题就是为什么无辜的人受苦, 这也看到当中之内的这个可伤害性和这个脆弱性。
Sometimes we come up with answers that are too easy because we want to protect ourselves.
因为有的时候这个答案是比较简单容易的，因为是我们愿意通过这个答案来保护自己。
The Jews thought that there was suffering because people did something wrong.
有的人想他之所以 受苦，可能是因为其他人做错了事。
Why was this man born blind? Because of his sin or because of his parents' sin?
为什么这个人生来就是瞎子呢? 是因为他的罪还是他父母的罪呢?
But when we accept uncertainty and when we accept that life is messy, it's harder for us. We feel vulnerable.
当我们接受这个 不确定性，当我们接受这个生活也是一团糟的时候，是让我们变成可以被伤害的。
But when we can do that, it also leads to living a fuller life.
当我们意识到这些东西的时候，我们会过一个更完整的生活。
And then the last thing she said about numbing vulnerability is that we pretend.
在最后一个呢，她说我们如何的 让我们的这个可伤害性得到麻木呢，是装蒜，假装。
We pretend that our actions don't have any effect. We pretend that we didn't hurt someone.
我们假装我们的行为没有什么效果，我们也没有伤害谁。
We pretend like nothing has happened.
我们装假装什么事都没发生。
So. Again, in spiritual direction, we want to help people to be more honest.
在灵修指导当中，我们帮助别人成为更诚实的人。
And when we go to spiritual direction, it's important for us to be honest with our spiritual director.
当我们走向我们的神师的时候，作为诚实，同神师的诚实是很重要的。
It's important for us to reveal our hearts to our spiritual director.
在我们身世面前把我们的内心打开, 这是很重要的。
Tell him what's wrong with you. Tell him where the weaknesses are.
告诉他, 你现在什么是错的, 还有你现在的内心发生什么。
And in that vulnerability, you can discover that you are worthy of connection.
在这种的可伤害性当中，你会发现你是值得被建立关系的，你是值得跟别人建立关系的。
Maybe we take another little break.
我们再休息一会儿。